Okay, let's call the Iron Range Unemployment Working Group to order, and thank you all for being here, and thank you all for being willing to participate. I'm just going to start out with introductions, and so I'm David Tomasoni, and I'm the State Senator from Chisholm, and co-chairing the working group with Representative Hackbarth, and I'll just turn it over to you to introduce yourself, and we'll go around the table, and everybody at the table can introduce themselves.
That's correct. I'm co-chair with Senator Tomasoni. I'm Representative Tom Hackbarth. I represent Northern Anoka County.
Stephanie Lampier, House Staff.
Representative Dale Lewick, represent District 10B, Aiken and most of Crow Wing County.
I'm Pat. I'm from Farmington.
Denny McNamara. I live in Hastings.
Good afternoon, Representative David Baker from District 17B, most of Candiota County.
Representative Marion O'Neill from Buffalo, Monticello, Maple Lake.
Jim Neuberger, Becker, Minnesota.
Bill Glahn, House Republican Staff.
Katie Clark-Steben, Commissioner of the Department of Employment and Economic Development.
Mark Phillips from Commissioner of Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Board.
I'm Ben Weeks, House Research.
I'm Anita Newman, House Research.
Harriet Hendricks from House Fiscal.
Harry Merkel, House Republican Research.
Claire Leiter, House Staff.
Laura Bach, Committee Legislative Assistant for Senator Tomasoni.
Scott Sandy, I'm the Committee Administrative Assistant for Senator Tomasoni.
Dave Senger, I'm Rochester.
Tom Saxog, Senate District 5, Bemidji, Grand Rapids, Walker.
Gary Dame, Senate District 16, Redwood Falls.
Rob Eklund, Representative District 3A, Kuching, Cook, Mostel Lake, and part of North St. Louis County.
Carly Moline, State Representative, District 6A, portions of St. Louis and Itasca counties.
Jason Metza, District 6B in Virginia, and represent ArcelorMittal, MinTac, EVTAC, and part of Mesabi Nugget.
Craig Janisich, Senate DFL Research.
Dan Mueller, Senate Fiscal Analyst.
Carlin Fontaine, Senate Counsel.
John Fuller, Senate Counsel.
Okay, go ahead.
A couple on the phone.
And you two guys on the phone?
Tom Anzell's Western Mesabi. Bob Gunther, Martin Thurber, Watton 1, and Jackson Counties.
Okay, thank you. Can you guys can hear us okay on the phone?
Yes, Senator.
Okay. All right. Once again, thank you all for attending. We are conducting this working group as a result of what's been going on in the steel industry and the results it's had on the Iron Range and the taconite industry and the mining industry. And it's akin to what happened in 2008. It maybe goes back as far as 2001, some things that happened. We've been used to a boom and bust type of mining cycle on the Iron Range. This year is one that appears to have far-reaching ramifications that we haven't seen before and is somewhat different than what we've seen before. And in fact, this is such a serious problem that we're meeting today for the potential extension of unemployment benefits for the Iron Range people who are affected in the mining industry by these by the world crises that's going on in the steel industry. And just to give you an example of how serious and how compelling it has been, that on December 22nd, just before Christmas, President Obama's Chief of Staff, Dennis McDonough, attended a meeting on the Iron Range that was maybe one of the most compelling meetings that I've been in my 24 years in the legislature. And present at the meeting, besides all the mayors, besides the Iron Range delegation, there was Senator Klobuchar, Senator Franken, Congressman Nolan, Governor Dayton, the CEO of Cleveland Cliffs was there, the president of Magnetation was there, the Steel Dynamics vice president was there, general manager of MinTac and representing U.S. Steel was there, all of the unions were there, many of the vendors were there, and the effect that this downturn has been having on the Iron Range has been very, very serious and has run into many different sections of the area. We're having people that have been laid off at various different times, and what you'll see happening and what you'll hear from testimony today is that some of them have lost their benefits, some of them are about to lose their benefits, and some of them are trying to get re-educated. You'll see that the 2-to-1 or 3-to-1 spin-off industries that are affected by the mining companies have lost quite a bit of employment also, and as a result of the mining companies not operating, and we are sitting in an area that we think we have to send a very strong signal from the legislature that we're supporting these workers, so when these jobs do come back, they'll be around and they'll be able to go back into work and make this industry work again. The reason for the meeting on December 22nd with Vice President, or with the President's Chief of Staff, was to impress upon him and the President the urgency that is out there for the federal government to act on the imports that are coming into this country from all over the world that are causing the domestic steel industry to not be able to produce steel. And many of these imports are they're flooding the market as a result of subsidized steel from foreign governments, and much of the steel is coming in is not high quality steel either. And so the idea of the meeting on December 22nd was to make sure that the President understood that there are tariffs that can be imposed and there's quotas that can be imposed, and that that they have the ability to do it. It was done before under President Bush and also under President Reagan, and we're hoping to hear from President Obama in a short period of time. In the meantime, here in the Minnesota State Legislature, we believe that extending unemployment benefits is the right way to go, and the governor is calling for, a 26-week extension also. So we're here to discuss that and to hear from people who are being affected. So with that, you want to say anything? Or?
Well, thank you, Senator Tomasoni. Yeah, just to get things rolling here, and I won't take a lot of time, but we did do a number of things during the last session for the Iron Range, and I don't want to say that we didn't do some of those things. So we should talk about some of those things that we did do. This just yesterday is the first time I heard about an extension for 26 weeks. I thought it was going to be more like 13 weeks. That's what I thought we had been talking about. So there are some concerns. I think we have a number of questions. I think that we should probably learn a little bit about how the system works, and hopefully we'll hear that through testimony here today from the department. So I think that's very curious to find out who's going to be affected, how many people are going to be affected, what's the dollar amount going to be, all of those kinds of things we're interested in hearing.
Okay. All right. What I want to do is we have a potential agenda sitting in front of us, and I want to go down the list of people that we have to testify. I have also that we'll hand out later a potential bill that we could possibly introduce that has what we believe would be a bill that would actually work for this, and the then after we get done with the testifiers, I think we'll have a committee discussion and open it up for everybody to talk. I think it's probably going to be okay when people testify if somebody wants to ask somebody a question that they ask the person a question. I think we can do that. I probably should point out that that my Senate district is home to 5 of the 6 taconite plants that we have on the range. It's home to 2 of the 4 magnetation plants that are on the range. It's home to the Mesabi Nugget plant. And of those, 2 of the 5 plants, one in Eveleth, one in Keewatin, is currently not running, and all the people are laid off. Both of the magnetation plants are closed down and nobody's working there, and the Nugget plant is also closed down and nobody's working there. In addition, magnetation number 3 will be laying people off this next week, and on the North Shore, which is the Senator Box district, that they will be laying people off in this month also. And so we're going to have 3 of the 6 plants will be down, as well as 3 of the magnetation plants, as well as the Nugget plant. And that, like I said earlier, is a spin-off into the other jobs that are affected by the mining industry. So with that, why don't I call on Commissioner Katie Clark-Sieben, and she can give us a little bit of a rundown of what is going on.
Thank you, Chair Tomasoni and Hackbarth. Thank you. Katie Clark-Sebrum from the Department of Employment and Economic Development. Like all of you, I'm deeply concerned about the devastating impact that these layoffs have had and that poor and steel dumping has had on the Iron Range and our mining companies and Minnesota families in that part of the state. I know I can speak for Governor Dayton in saying the administration is committed to doing anything we can to help Iron Range businesses and workers recover from this downturn and build towards an even stronger future for our state. So for our conversation today, I thought I'd just share some top-line information about our unemployment insurance program and our trade adjustment assistance program. Our unemployment insurance program provides a temporary wage replacement for workers who are laid off through no fault of their own. Workers are eligible for up to 26 weeks of regular unemployment insurance benefits with a maximum benefit amount of $658 per week. Unemployment insurance helps relieve economic distress for workers and families, in addition to serving as a stabilizer for the overall economy by shoring up purchasing power during economic downturns. Unfortunately, there are some economic situations that are so severe that the standard UI benefit of 26 weeks are not sufficient. The Minnesota legislature provided additional weeks of UI benefits, also known as extended benefits, to a variety of different groups in special circumstances in the past. A few examples include airline workers laid off following 9/11, and farm workers affected by the recent avian flu crisis. In addition to unemployment insurance, our department helps administer trade adjustment assistance for the state. As many of you have probably heard over the last few months, laid-off mine workers have taken advantage of trade adjustment assistance benefits paid for by the federal government. The Trade Adjustment Assistance, or TAA, program serves workers who have lost their jobs as a result of increased foreign trade by providing the resources, skills, credentials these workers need to return to the workforce in a good job. So TAA provides re-employment services and case management. It can also pay for costs associated with job training and classroom training to allow a worker to upgrade their skills or find a new job in a new industry. On the Iron Range, we've seen many individuals taking advantage of TAA training plans, going into fields such as welding and diesel mechanic programs at Minsky institutions. One known benefit is that it can provide eligible workers up to 2 years of trade readjustment allowances, so extended unemployment benefits and training for up to 2 years if that training program is a full two-year program. DEED has been working hard to ensure that every worker, mining worker eligible for TAA benefits is signing up for them before they run out of their state-funded UI benefits. A few examples, we've held nearly 50 outreach events on the range since layoffs started. We've worked closely with Minsky to ensure there are openings in in-demand training programs, which I do know classrooms are getting full. And we've made outreach calls to any individual who is within 3 weeks of exhausting their regular unemployment insurance benefits, ensuring that laid-off mine workers understand that they need to sign up for TAA before their regular UI benefits end in order to keep receiving those benefits. And we are seeing people sign up. However, in order to be eligible for TAA, a company needs to be certified by the U.S. Department of Labor and go through a process to identify that, yes, this layoff is due to a trade impact. Our mining companies, thanks to many sitting around this table, our governor, our federal delegation, have pushed for expedited processes from the U.S. Department of Labor for TAA for those mining companies. There are many other layoffs that have occurred outside of our mining companies that are not eligible for TAA or are currently under investigation as to whether or not they will be eligible for TAA. So there are vendors, suppliers, businesses in the area. DEED is currently working on 731 layoff cases, 731 workers that have been laid off, that work for vendors, suppliers, businesses in the Iron Range community that their companies are currently not certified for TAA, but our team is investigating whether or not those layoffs are due to trade, and thus whether we can submit an application for TAA for those companies. Of course, our department is always working hard to get TAA wherever possible so that we do have extended benefits in place for people through TAA if it is due to a trade issue. So 731 workers that are on our regular 26-week unemployment insurance program that will be exhausting their benefits at the end of 26 weeks unless their company is deemed that those layoffs were due to trade. And if I may, Commissioner Phillips and the IRRB have some additional information on this topic.
Yeah. Mark Phillips, Commissioner at IRRB, and working with Commissioner Sieben, we decided that we could add some value because we're an economic development agency by reaching out to this vendor supplier community. So we worked through the Iron Mining Association. It's an association of 175 companies that primarily service this industry. And we did an email survey through the IMA. They have 175 members. We only got about a 15% response because this was done in the last 24 hours. And just with that, we came up with about 586 people who we're not double counting. These are in addition to the 731 that where their companies have applied for TAA program. These are companies that have not applied. So that brings the grand total of about 1,317, and that's with only a very small sampling. It's not scientific, but I think you could extrapolate that there are certainly going to be more people than 1,317 affected. And these are, again, suppliers. And although the deed staff is working very hard to get companies certified, indirect effects are harder to certify. So we're not confident we're going to have a lot of these companies certified so that they would be exhausting benefits and would be looking towards the action that the legislature might take to expand. That's really the information I have. I just want to tell you how serious this is, though. I lived through the 1980s, the early 1980s, around when the last time we had this kind of tonnage drop in the taconite industry, and I can tell you that, we lost a very significant portion of our population in northeastern Minnesota, lost some taconite plants, and some of our school districts have never recovered, and we're trying to work through collaboration and consolidation to keep our education system up and grow our economy. And we can't take another 20% drop in population in northeastern Minnesota. And what these benefits do is keep people intact and in their homes and living there while we can react and try to create jobs and try to get work with the industry to get started again. And so I can't tell you how important these actions you're taking are to our part of the state.
Thank you, commissioners. Does anyone want to ask a quick question of any of the commissioners? Either of the commissioners? Okay. Well, with that, then let's just start with our list of testifiers. And Mayor, Mr. Poncich, would you like to come forward? And even though your name's on the list here, if you're going to be testifying, just say your name for the record so that it gets into the tape, and then you can go ahead and testify.
Okay.
So
can you
welcome,
hear me?
Mayor. Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you again. My name is Mayor Andrea Zaponcich. I'm the mayor of the city of Babbitt. I'm a first-time mayor, so I'm deeply honored to be here. This is really kind of big for me. I'm a mother of four. I own my own real estate brokerage, as well as I'm a proud hockey mom. Mining is our town. Our annual festival is based on mining. Our main and only industry is mining, and the main employer of the town is the mine. Mining built our town, and most of the 800 houses in town were built with American steel. Steel windows, steel roofs, steel siding, and steel doors. Some are even built like bomb shelters, and I'm a real estate agent, so I've been in a lot of these homes, so I can actually attest to that. We have a small town, roughly about 1,600 people. That was basically the size of my high school where I grew up, grades 9 through 12. We have a grocery store, two banks. Luckily, we still have a post office, two gas stations, a few restaurant bars, and thankfully, we do have a K through 12 school. And that's about it. It's not a lot, but it's ours, and we're proud of it and thankful that we still have it when other communities are losing theirs. We're not a tourist town. We do not have any other big businesses to employ our population. We are a mining town. It is my honor to be here and humbled to be speaking on behalf of the mayors and local elected officials representing over 100,000 citizens that live across the vast swath of northern Minnesota, known as the Iron Range. Our history runs as deep as our pride in producing the iron ore that built our nation's cities, supplied the armaments, and won world wars, and now supply our country's auto and appliance manufacturers, employing tens of thousands of people across the country. The steel dumping crisis has now stretched ground zero from the communities of Nashwauk and Keewatin, Hibbing and Virginia, and now to our cities in Babbitt and Silver Bay, affecting thousands of families. Our Iron Range communities were built by the mining industry. Our economic opportunities are wedded to the vast natural resources in our forests and minerals. We live a vastly different existence than from the thriving metro. Mining is our way of life and has been for decades. This is our home, our parents' home, our grandparents' home, and our children's homes. Every single citizen of my region is touched by this crisis. We started holding our breath early last year when we began to see the price of iron ore fall through the floor. We kept holding our breath when Minntac, Keetac, and United layoffs were announced. Then Mesabi Nugget laid off all their employees, and Magnetation started closing some of their plants. We breathed a sigh of relief when a portion of them went back to work, still hoping the rest would follow. We've weathered these times before, but this time it feels different. And now it's our turn in Babbitt and Silver Bay with the recent Cliffs layoffs. And what's even more scarier, no start back date. There are so many things that are piling up on the industry. Across the range, we are now to over 2,000 laid off mining employees and thousands of others who work for the suppliers and vendors who are suffering the personal brunt of unfair trade practices, supporting foreign economies that subsidize or even own their steel industries. But it's not only the miners that are affected by the devastating situation. It's the communities, the schools, and the citizens as well. It's the local daycare provider. She was at full capacity, mostly with miners' kids, but now she has open spaces to fill. Does she start taking the people on the list? But what happens to the miners' kids when they get called back to work? Who will take care of those kids? It's the gas station owners who won't be selling that much gas anymore, that cup of coffee to go, service station owners not doing as many oil changes or tire changes, and it's the local grocery store that's affected. Everyone is going to make that dollar stretch farther and the best they possibly can. So that means even more people with hours cut or worse, laid off as a result of these layoffs. They don't work in the mine, but they are all equally hit as hard. We understand this devastation firsthand. My husband is one of the owners in a local family grocery store chain, touting six stores across the area in Silver Bay, Babbitt, Aurora, Ely, Cook, and Tower, all mining towns. In fact, they're celebrating their 100 years in business this upcoming year, and they had to make the unfortunate decision to close their grocery store in Aurora. The effects of the local mines gave them no choice, but unfortunately, there may be another one too. So we have our skilled and trained mining workforce here, generations of proud miners that want to live here, raise their families here, and retire here. This is the way of life for them and not just a job. Their pride goes into those mines. If they leave, what happens to our communities and schools? Classes are already getting smaller, programs cut, sports teams combined with other towns, or worse, canceled altogether. We want our kids to have the same advantages that the metro area offers. Babbitt at one time had two elementary schools and one high school. We now have K through 12 in one building and plenty of empty classrooms left. Reserve Mine, currently Cliffs, built our town an amazing arena, one of the first of the time to have plexiglass. And we were proud to produce an Olympic hockey skater, Buzz Schneider, and I believe his father was a miner too. Those towns were built by the mines. They believed in our miners and the communities, as they still do today. That all being said, I now understand how mayors of communities that have faced epic floods and devastating tornadoes must feel. I implore you to treat this disaster with the same amount of federal attention and concern and prompt action. I applaud the recent announcements of the U.S. Department of Commerce action on setting tariffs and anti-dumping duties on foreign cold-rolled steel that competes directly with our domestic taconite customers. All of us who live on the Iron Range, we are willing to work hard and build our economic future. We are resilient. We have generations of miners that treat their work as if it was their own family business. And we are committed to the long-term support of our traditional iron mining industry. We are hopeful that new innovations in metal technologies and non-ferrous mineral mining will keep our sector growing and thriving for generations to come, and the family traditions can continue. Thank you for this opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Mayor. Any questions?
Do you have anyone has questions?
Okay. Nope. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Rick Tanada. Rick has a dual hat.
Yeah. So I was going to say, Senator.
Okay. Right.
First of all, I want to thank you for letting us be here today to speak. And like Senator Tomasoni said, I wear a lot of different hats. I'm the mayor of Hibbing, Minnesota. I've been in the Labor's local 1097 up there since 1979. And plus I'm the vice president of Iron Range Building Trades. You're going to hear from a lot of different things. The mayor Babbitt, she spoke about the what for the mayors. But I want to start out with, in 1979, when I graduated from Hibbing, Minnesota, like the Commissioner Phillips said, the population in the 70s and early 80s in Hibbing was 21,000 people, roughly. I don't have nothing written down. I speak from the heart. So I might go back and forth a little bit. Right now, our population's sitting around 16,500. So, like Commissioner Phillips said, when this hit in the 1980s, we lost a lot of people. I was one of them that left in 1980. I got into the Labor's Union in 1980, thought everything was great. Back then, you had two choices. We'll work in the mines or construction, because construction is part of the mining industry, too. When the mines are doing good, our contractors up there, from the Lakeheads, the Bolts, the Krause Andersons, you can go on and on. They're working on the mines, building mines. Well, now we're seeing this again. And in the last couple of years, like Senator Tomasoni would know and everybody from the Iron Range, our schools were starting to go back again. In the Hibbing School District alone, third grade, second grade, they were adding classes. They were down to two classes in some of it. We closed. In the 80s, we had five or six elementary schools. Right now, we're down to a high school that is 7th through 12th. Middle school, that's 3rd through 6th grade, and two elementary schools that are kindergarten and through 2nd grade. So we've lost a lot of population, and with the unemployment extension, it goes to the construction workers, to the manufacturers, to people that, like Masaba Tire. Little story, Monday at Super One at the grocery store, my wife was just getting a couple groceries. A lady came up to her and was upset. Her husband works at Masaba Tire that supplies tires to the mines. Not just one, but a smaller business up there. Her husband, she was saying, and I don't know exactly, but this is what she told my wife. He was laid off in October, and he's going to be running out of employment. And unemployment's great, the maximum. I agree with that. That's good. But a lot of people, especially in the construction trades and that work at manufacturers or suppliers, it goes by your hours. I know all about unemployment. It goes by your hours and how much you're making. And most of the construction workers, everybody thinks they're temporary jobs. They're full-time jobs. But when we're laid off, you get an unemployment check. And then if you use five or six of them, 6 weeks, when you get laid off again, now you're minus six weeks, and so now you're down to 20 weeks. And I'll tell you what. I don't know very many construction workers that ever get maximum unemployment, because we are full-time employees, but we're always going from job to job. And when it starts with the mines, like I said, it goes down to the construction workers and the contractors. And I'll tell you what, if you ever can live on, and back in the 70s and 80s, maximum unemployment was like $250. I'll tell you what, if you're getting $100 and you're trying to support a family of five, in the late 80s, like I was, and you get a pound of hamburger and you can barely pay your bills to stay afloat. This affects everybody, what's going on. So with this, whatever you can do to help everybody up there, miners, the people that work for Masaba Tire, because I'll guarantee you, people are leaving right now. I know a lot of people that work in construction that live up there, that they're leaving the state, and this affects the whole state. They're going where the work is. And our school system, like I said, I was happy, and Representative Moline knows, our schools were starting to get back again, because we used to have 400 kids when I graduated, and we're under 200 a class now graduating. And if these people keep leaving, our schools are going to shut down more and more, not just in Hibbing, but like Mayor Babbitt said, all across the Iron Range. So this affects everybody up there. So I appreciate you speaking, and like I said, whatever you can do to extend it to everybody that's affiliated with it. Because like I said, I love the numbers. I wish everybody could get $656 on unemployment, but it just doesn't work like that in the real world. So thank you.
Thank you, Rick. Representative Metza.
Wait. Thank you, Chair Tomasoni.
Wait a second.
You mind staying up, Mayor Cannata?
I'll answer as many questions. As long as I get back for the Rams,
We're all going to try. You mentioned that you were vice president of the Iron Range Building Trades, and, you know, I think one important thing for us to kind of touch on, just for a little background with the, on top of just the ore prices being low and jobs being lost because of that, we've got the ripple effects. Part of those ripple effects specifically are SR, who we've all seen in the news has been behind a little bit on their bills, and Magnetation also claimed bankruptcy on one of its operations. And I was wondering if you could just touch base on how that affects a local business owner, if you know any local business owners, on describe, you know, cash flow and things like that on top of the industry being slow.
Oh, yeah, I can. Here. I know a lot of local, and I'm not going to be naming names because I don't know their exact money and all that, but I know there's a couple just in Hibbing alone and in Chisholm, actually, that they were supplying to Esser Steel, too, which was going on, and now they're slowed back. And they're smaller businesses, and right now what's happening, because now with everything else, they're not even supplying to Esser Steel or any of these mines, and so they're laying off people. And actually, New Year's Eve, I was out to dinner with two small business owners, and they don't know what they're going to do. Their companies, because they go by what happens in the mines. They supply to the mines. They've laid off a few people already, and they might be closing their doors. So Representative Metz knows there's a lot of smaller business owners out there that do business with the mines, and it's affecting them. And they've had businesses for years up there. Not a big business, but a small business that live off of the mining industry and the construction industry. Because if you're working at Esser Steel, they're building a new plant or they're expanding to Keytac or Mintac, so they're supplying the nuts and the bolts and other things like that, overhead doors, you know, hardware and that. So a lot of these people, and when they go, they're gonna leave the area to try something new somewhere. So I can say more and more, Mayor Jason.
That's good. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. Okay.
Any other questions? Like I said, I'll answer all day.
I'll do the other question part. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Yeah.
That's what happens.
I know. Dan Pierce.
Good afternoon. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to come down and speak. My name's Dan Pierce. I'm employed at Keewatin Taconite. I'm the vice president, and I'm also the grievance chair for Local 2660. I'd like to give a little history of why I'm here today. We were given a 60-day WARN notice back in the middle of March, which affected 360 of our members. And just to give you a little update on that, I was actually in this very same room testifying on behalf of the union and the company when we were given this notice after I left this room. So we were the first mining company to be affected by this downturn at Keewatin Taconite. The first round of layoffs came on May 17th of 2015, which affected 185 members, which most of these members have already exceeded their first 26 weeks of unemployment. That left about 175 members still working. They worked until the end of July, when they were all forced to take layoffs to use up their vacation, and then returned August 31st for a repair and maintenance outage that they wanted to get the plant up and ready and be ready to go if we got called back to work. So that brought back 175 members for that outage for that 10-week period. On October 12th, that number from 175 was reduced down to 12, or down to 15, excuse me. They are still currently working at KeyTac, doing fire watch and miscellaneous maintenance work as needed. And that number does change from time to time, but not very much. We currently have 185 members that have already used up, like I said, the first 6 months of their unemployment benefits with no return to work in sight. The other 135 members will run out of unemployment sometime in March or April of 2016. That is the reason why we need an unemployment extension. Members need these extra weeks of unemployment while they're waiting for classes to open up at our local colleges under the Trade Adjustment Assistance Program, known as TAA, which most of these classes do not start until August or September of 2016. Many of our members are on the waivers, which that means they're waiting for openings in these classes or waiting for the class to begin with no guarantee that they're going to get into these classes because the classes may already be full. So basically, they're on the trade readjustment allowance, which is basically extending their benefits right now under the TRA, which that extends their benefits for an additional 26 weeks, which then benefits will now run out sometime around March or April also, because they ran out in November. They should be using these benefits while they're in school, not waiting to get into class. The extensions would also benefit our senior members with 30 plus years of service that are waiting for a call back to work. This group of members were forced to work 10 plus years beyond the retirement date to qualify for their pensions under the PBGC Act. The pensions of these members were cut in half when National Steel Pellet Company went bankrupt in early 2002. With more backlog coming in April, with the rest of us running out of unemployment benefits, we need an unemployment extension to cover our members waiting to start for school or waiting for a return to call. I appreciate the opportunity to speak today, and each one of these numbers are connected with a family that have kids that are either in school, grade schools, high schools. I have a 3- and a 6-year-old. My 6-year-old see me this morning again at 6 o'clock putting my suit on and asking me where I was going. I told her I'm going to St. Paul. She goes, I think you need to go back to work.
She's not used to seeing you in a suit like this.
I would rather myself put on my work boots than put on a suit.
That's right.
Myself. So it does affect everybody. And I do have some numbers that I can run right by real quick while I'm up here. At our facility alone, we have 35 to 40 guys and gals that don't have any benefits whatsoever the month that they were laid off. We have 117 to 120 members with less than 10 years of service that will be running out of that are already out of unemployment and are going to be losing their insurance. Plus, our senior members are a third of our workforce. We have over 100 members with 30 plus years of service waiting for a return to call. So I appreciate your time. If anyone has any questions, I'd be more than happy to explain.
Well, some of these people who are 59 and 60 years old have gone through it all, and now to ask them to go back to school and to change jobs is really
That's it. And the average age of these senior employers are 57 to 67 years old.
Any questions for Mr. Pierce? Representative Rothwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Pierce. Mr. Pierce, do you know, last session we passed special unemployment benefit assistance. Did that benefit assistance cover the workers at KeyTac?
Yes. We basically, what that's in lieu of is that we're claiming our unemployment benefits along with our vacation at the same time. We did that, but now with everyone's unemployment running out and it's a new year and stuff, they can continue to do that. But some people only have a week, some people have a couple, and it just goes on as a domino effect as you continue to run out of avenues to go.
And Mr. Chairman and Mr. Pierce, can you just talk a little bit about how that was effective or was not effective? In terms of the legislation we passed last year, would you categorize that as it was effective or was it not effective? And just describe for the committee why.
Yeah, it was effective because it saved a lot of time when you're doing your unemployment as your benefit. Also, it gave the person or the member the extra money while you were on the unemployment and taking your vacation at the same time. So, yes, it was a benefit for the member to do both at the same time.
And, Mr. Chairman, perhaps it may be helpful, maybe not all members of the committee are aware of that, the special unemployment benefit assistance provision we passed, and maybe it would be helpful if we had someone from that jurisdiction perhaps cover what normal law is and what the change
made
was. We can
have Mr. Caligiuri come up and explain it if you'd like to, or Commissioner if you want to. But my understanding of what we did wasn't an extension of any benefits. All it was saying that vacation pay did not count against getting the benefit.
That's correct.
So they got the vacation pay.
And Mr. Chairman, that's why I said it's special unemployment benefit assistance. It wasn't an extension. It was special unemployment benefit assistance.
It was. So. Yeah.
But I think that would be helpful if we for members of this work group to understand what normal law is and what the changes we passed and what impact that had.
Commissioner, do you want to do that or do you want Mr. Caligiuri to come up or?
Why don't we have Mr. Caligiuri?
Mr. Caligiuri, we want to just come and explain it.
Mr. Chair, members, I'm Rick Caligiuri, and I oversee the Unemployment Insurance Program at DEED.
And I think Representative Garofalo's question is, what was the provision in the
budget? Provision had to do with the vacation pay. Normally, on a temporary layoff, we do not deduct vacation pay. On a permanent layoff, we do not deduct vacation pay. If it's a temporary layoff, we do deduct vacation pay. This essentially doesn't change the amount of benefits that an individual gets. When we deduct, it essentially delays when they start getting benefits. We treat severance pay the same way. We deduct severance pay, and that just delays when an individual would start receiving unemployment insurance benefit checks. And they still, once they start receiving those checks, would be able to get up to 26 weeks of benefits. So for this particular situation with the minors, the policy discussion was, it was uncertain how long these layoffs would last given the what was going on, the global dynamics of the market, and the decision in the legislature was meant to was ultimately to treat this as if they were more like a permanent layoff and not to deduct the vacation pay.
Representative Baker, were you on this point?
It was actually a question, Mr. Chair, for Mr. Pierce, who was up here before, but okay. I can wait on this.
I think Representative Metza, you have a question on this point.
To that point,
okay,
yeah.
To that point. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Caligiuri, first off, for all the work you and your department have done in our region. It's greatly appreciated by everyone. And just one clarification question, just more for public record than anything. This would be very standard historical state practice for any construction trades with the characterization of the special law that we're talking about, correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative, are you asking about the vacation aspect?
Yes.
Again, normally we deduct it for a temporary layoff, but we do not if we perceive it to be a long-term layoff. This was kind of an agreement reached by business and labor years and years ago relative to the policy involved with unemployment insurance benefits, and the thinking was that with a permanent layoff, you know, whatever, they cash in their vacation benefits, they have to restart their lives and start a new career, etc. So for permanent layoffs, they would not deduct it.
Then one other quick follow-up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Historically, have you seen layoffs in the mining industry like this with no call back dates, you know, being talked about or in sight, so to speak, for this extended period of time?
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, we've seen permanent shutdowns of mining facilities in the past, like LTV.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I think the question was, have you seen it in businesses that aren't shutting, that aren't going bankrupt and aren't announcing that they're shutting down? I think that's what Representative Metz was getting to, because we did see permanent shutdowns with LTV, we did see it with Butler Taconite, but the companies continued to go forward. And I think you're asking was, are these announcements of layoffs, which appear to be permanent, but haven't been announced that they're permanent, which is why we did the vacation pay. The WARN notice was just a warning that they're going to be laying people off. And am I correct,
Mr. Chair? You are correct. And there was a whole debate about the global market, what was happening, and the perception that they potentially could be very long term layoffs.
Okay. Any other questions of Mr. Caligiuri as long as he's up here? Okay. Thank you. Dan, I think there's a question from Representative Baker yet that he wants to ask.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and again, thank you, Mr. Pierce. And this may be addressed to Mr. Pierce or possibly Commissioner Clark Sieben. You made a statement about classrooms are being filled and folks are waiting to get in that might be eligible for the TAA training program. Have we, with the rest of our MNSCU campuses around the state, been able to find collaborative ways to fill up other classrooms that have empty seats that might be the right kind of training for our folks up in northern Minnesota that can relocate during the week, go home on the weekends, and try to get them trained as quickly as we can with empty seats if there's a bit of a backlog for training classrooms up in northern Minnesota? I know, you know, we've got great classes all around the state and a lot of campuses with empty seats. I'm just curious if there's been some discussions about how we can maximize our training around the state, because time is our enemy here. Mm-hmm. We've got to get folks trained as quickly as we can, and I know at Ridgewater and Wilmer we've got empty seats that we could probably help fill out. I'm just curious about that. Thank you.
Do you want me to get somebody from MNSCU up here?
That probably would
anybody
be the
from
best.
MNSCU like to come up? Mr. Mackey, come on up. Maybe this would be better addressed to the
thank you.
Okay. Just say your name for the record, Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Bill Mackey, president of the Northeast Higher Education District, which involves five colleges and six communities, Mesabi Range and Eveleth in Virginia, Hibbing Community College, Itasca Community College, Rainy River Community College, and Vermilion Community College. So we're working really hard right now on trying to serve these needs that have come upon us. One of the areas that Mr. Pierce brought up that is a concern of ours is that we are seeing a large influx of demand for some of our technical programs. And it isn't so much the flexibility of being able to find the time or the space to do that. It's that they're very heavily capital-intensive technical programs. So we have caps on some of our programs right now of 24 students, for example. The diesel mechanic program, which was mentioned by Commissioner Clark Sieben, is one example, and we have demand for next fall already of three times that amount. But in order to accommodate that need, we need to find resources to have more capital equipment come in order to do that, because we just can't use the same labs. They're very fixed curriculum where students come in, they learn, and then we need another space if we bring in another cohort, because it's very simulated, and the way the learning structure is set up, it's that way. So we're working really hard to find more resources to meet that capacity, because for fall of 2016, some of our programs are already at capacity, and that is over 8 months away from now. And we did do some programs in the spring where we did get some students come in welding and some of our other areas. But again, equipment needs would really being addressed would really help us increase our capacity. And what's important to us is to keep the laid off workers in our geographical area, and as well as the high school students that we normally get, is to keep them home so we don't suffer some of the same demographic changes that happened in the early 80s.
Okay. Yeah, follow up, please, Mr. Chair. So, okay, and I understand the need to try to keep them home during that period of time. But again, if we've got other diesel mechanic classes around the state that have that capital in place, our investments are there in place. Are all the other classrooms around the state kind of full and able to take on any pressure for this influx right now in northern Minnesota? I guess I just want to understand that those types of classes, are they being utilized at all to help this time frame to get folks back to northern Minnesota so they can actually get to work?
Mr. Chair and members, we need to do some more work in that area to reach out to our sister institutions within the system to see where the capacity is. Many of these numbers have come in most recently in the last 3 or 4 weeks. So we've reached out to our natural service area in the northeast of Lake Superior College and the colleges that are in our natural area, but we have not yet gone beyond to like the example you gave with Ridgewater or colleges that aren't real close to us.
Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that my comments are not meant to throw darts your way. At some point, maybe we need the chancellor here. But it seems to me, unless I'm misunderstanding something, that we have a fairly grave emergency situation on the Iron Range. I think that's fairly clear. And it seems to me then, with respect to our Minscu system, we need to put the full court press on, so to speak. The facilities are there. We may need some additional instructors brought in, if you will. But there are nights, there are weekends. The idea that we would take summer off at the college, and you can't enroll until summer, it's almost abhorrent to me. I just think we need to be a little more imaginative about the Minscu situation in that area of the state and try to make things work in terms of the needs of additional training and maybe moving these people on to new careers. There's no reason that I can think of why we shouldn't be at least talking about that.
Mr. Chairman, just to that point.
Go ahead, Representative Ruffel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Senjum and Representative Baker, I appreciate both your comments on this area with regards to workforce training, workforce development, and getting people out there to take the jobs. But we got to have an honest conversation about what's going on right now. Okay? We have state employees right now who are working on taxpayer dollars to destroy the very projects that are creating the private sector jobs we're supposedly training these employees for. So we can talk to Minscu and we can do all the retraining we want, but the government is operating like a dog chasing its own tail. We're incentivizing this training, incentivizing this transition to new careers and jobs, and another branch of the government is working to destroy the jobs that are being created specifically in northern Minnesota. So Senator Senjum, Representative Baker, I appreciate your comments, but yeah, it's a chicken and egg problem.
Well, Senator Garofalo, I think we'd all agree we need to fix that also, and whatever that is.
And it is in a certain way related to what we're talking about, but at the same time we are talking about trying to make sure that these people can stay where they live, and when they do get called back to work, that they're still there and can go back to work, and that's part of what we're trying to avoid a massive exodus of the place. And I know Representative Lewick, for example, from International Falls is having that issue with Boise Cascade, and so I think it's incumbent on us to send a message. We support you as workers and we want you to go back to work, but we're going to do whatever we can to make sure you can. And in the meantime, if that doesn't happen, then you get retrained and you try and find another job. But I think the urgency here is extremely, extremely important that we send a really, really good message. Representative Moline.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a couple of points to the Minscu discussion. I think the first one about sending workers to other parts of the states to get a higher education, you know, I think is unrealistic for a couple of reasons. First of all, we want to make sure that we do keep people in our communities. That's where their families are. That's where their kids are going to school. You know, secondly is just the cost associated with asking people to relocate for the week. If you go from earning an income in the mines to living off of unemployment, you're taking a substantial pay cut. You're probably having trouble paying your mortgage on the Iron Range, let alone trying to pay for temporary rent or a hotel on a weekly basis, getting a higher education elsewhere. You know, that's why we think it's important that our five community colleges in northeastern Minnesota are able to serve our workers so they can not only stay in our communities and keep their families there, but they can, you know, afford to do that and keep their houses on the range. And then secondly, when we talk about retraining, you know, I think that it's great that so many students are going into welding and diesel mechanics, but you know, in reality, we have to recognize that the jobs in those industries on the range are all tied to the mining industry. They either work directly for the mines or they work for vendors and suppliers who supply to the mines. And so we want to make sure that jobs are there 2 years from now when they finish their retraining and that the taconite mines are back up and running. Otherwise, you know, they will have gotten a certificate in diesel mechanics or welding, but they may not have a place to work on the range if we don't get the taconite mines, you know, back up and running. And, you know, the ultimate issue here, while there may be some peripheral issues, Representative Groff, well, the ultimate issue here with our taconite industry is foreign steel dumping, which we're dealing with at a national level. And until we get that under control, our taconite industry is going to be extremely volatile on the range. And so I just want to make the comment that it's important to us that our five community colleges in northeastern Minnesota have the resources they need. And they certainly have a variety of programs, not limited just to traditional blue-collar work, but nursing and some other advanced programs. And I think that if we work on getting them the resources that they need, then we can make sure that there are places for everyone that's laid off. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. I would just two comments. One is, Mr. Mackey, I would suggest that if you have the opportunity to please contact Central Lakes College. They're located just about 16 miles outside of Crosby, right next to the old Cuyuna Range. They've got a huge capacity there, and they've got a campus at Wadena. That's right next door. Literally, the school district boundary separates that from the IRRB boundary. So that's a separate rice bowl, as we say in Asia. You know, you're in a different district, but there's a huge capacity there for welding, diesel mechanics, all kinds of stuff. And so, for goodness sakes, reach out and talk to those folks. I mean, that's a long drive for people, but that's right next door. It's not down at Wilmer or Rochester or Worthington, Minnesota. Second thing is, I just want to second what Representative Garoppolo commented about. We've got a situation where we've got acres of steel sitting in fields that we can't get in the ground on the Sandpiper and Line 3 pipeline. I mean, we've got, it appears, based on the news reports, elements of the state government that has been carrying on guerrilla warfare against private sector companies trying to put in pipelines and use up steel. And that's not a side issue, gentlemen and ladies.
Senator Sackler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. A year and a half ago, I chaired a task force in the Minnesota Senate with eight senators from rural Minnesota, and Senator Dames was one of those. It didn't take us very long to figure out that the two biggest problems we have in terms of economic development in rural Minnesota was workforce development and workforce housing, mainly workforce development. Well, we're just sitting here talking about that very thing. It isn't like there's a lot of net capacity left in the rest of rural Minnesota, because we've got as big a problem in other parts of Minnesota training a workforce to keep the jobs that we need as any place else. This, what we're talking about here, is exacerbated as our whole workforce development problem, because we have, you know, whereas we all have, Senator Deems, we found that we all had the problem that we're trying to keep our workers in rural Minnesota because the jobs are there. Well, we've got these people being laid off, and we've got to keep them in rural Minnesota because we all know what we've even got the examples of back in the 80s what happened when the taconite plants and the natural ore pits went out of business. There's plenty of people down in the metropolitan area right now who are former Rangers, and we don't want any former Rangers working down here. We need to keep them up in rural Minnesota and a vibrant steel industry. And so this is just a way of holding the line so we can get to the point where we're going to get the steel industry back. The price of steel eventually we're hoping will go up and things will get back to normal.
Okay, thank you. Are there any more questions of these two witnesses as long as they're up here? Representative Newberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As I sit here and I listen to this, I've been through some of this dialogue already on a different field, and I was what Representative Moline said. I'd like to echo a little bit of that. I think that the reliance, this is my opinion here, the reliance solely on retraining, I think that we have to be real careful when we go down that route. You are looking at people who are in their 40s, they're in their 50s. They're probably at the top of their pay scale up on the range in the mines. Now you're going to look at someone. I'm 51 years old. If you came to me and said, "I work in emergency services and I'm at the top of my pay scale, I make $32 an hour," if someone came to me and said, "Jim, your job's going to get cut and you're going to be eliminated in the next 90 days. We want to retrain you to do something else." Well, that's all good and fine, but what are you going to retrain someone like me to do? Mm-hmm. And then at what wage are these people going to start at? You're talking to people that have been on the range all their lives, and they're in this field, and they're at the top of their pay scales, or they're at pay scales that are high. You're going to retrain them to do something so that they can relocate potentially and then start at an entry-level wage. And you're also going to disrupt the communities, like you're saying. This doesn't work. I mean, retraining, it's part of the answer, but it is not the answer. Because if you're talking about retraining, I think that works for people who are in the industry, if they're in there maybe less than 10 years. But once you get established in a community, it's like any other field. So we have to be really careful. And the other thing that we don't talk about is, let's say you have that 50-year-old worker, or you have that late 40s worker who's close to the top of the pay scale, and you retrain them to do something entirely different. If the economy there doesn't support that new job, they're not going to work there. And the other thing you have to keep in mind is if you're 50 years old and you're looking at retirement, you know, in the short run, now you've got to go in and compete with a brand new workforce of young people who are fresh out of school. So retraining is not the entire answer, and it's part of the answer, but we need to take a sober look at that and not just throw all of our eggs into that basket. I agree with Representative Garofalo and Representative Lewick. I think that the problems are deeper and that we have to go after the actual foundation of the problem and not just look at retraining as being this nebulous answer to all of our problems. I'm not against retraining, but we have to have a really sober look when we talk about that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Deems.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess one of the concerns I'm sensing here is that we are hearing from the testifiers that there's probably not much light at the end of the tunnel as far as when they're going to go back to work. So what happens, we extend this for 26 weeks, and now we get to that end of that 26 weeks. What are we going to do in the meantime to try to solve some of these issues? Or we just come back in 26 weeks and have this conversation again? I think we've got to do a lot of work besides just talk about extending the unemployment. I think we have to talk about what we're going to do to try to help the situation so we're not back here 6 months from now talking about the same issue.
Well, that I don't disagree with you. I think a long-term solution would be great, but we've been running up against boom and bust up in the Iron Range for years and years and years. And like the mayor, Ms. Uponsich said, this one is different from the standpoint of, and after today's and yesterday's stock market, I'm having a hard time saying this, but the economy of the rest of the country is going really, really well. And but but for the way the steel is being dumped on the shores, that the Iron Range has a really, really negative reaction to the steel industry having a little hiccup. And the fact is that we're buying time is what we're doing, because there are solutions at the federal level to stop the industry from being dumped on the way it is, and what we're trying to do is not only make sure that that these people can stay in their homes and support their families, we're trying to wait until this action by the federal government happens so that the steel industry start producing steel again and the miners go back to work. And I think at some point the federal government has to come up with a permanent solution, and I think that's what we're going to have to work on. So I totally respect what you're saying, and I understand it. At the same time, we don't want a whole generation of people leaving the range again and having to worry about going through some kind of a downturn. So let's move on, as long as we got some. Okay, I'm sorry, Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Chair. To that point, one thing I haven't heard in all this discussion that we've had and all the questions raised is diversification of industry. And has there been, if you kept talking about ebbs and flows and now we're in an emergency and a crisis, has there ever been discussions about diversifying your industries up there so you're not solely dependent upon steel?
I'm going to turn this over to the commissioner of the IRRB, but let me just tell you that we never stop talking about it, and it never stops coming back to a natural resource economy. And it's got a lot to do with where we're located, and it's got a lot to do with the value of the jobs and how good the jobs are in the industry itself. And trying to replace them is very, very difficult. Representative Newberger just mentioned $32 an hour. Well, the jobs that come in to replace them are $15 an hour, and they're $10 an hour, and people don't stay for those jobs. But Commissioner, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, Representative O'Neill, yes, and in fact, you know, in the early 80s, when we had a big industry downsizing, it was the national economy was having the problem. And so there was a big paradigm adjustment of the steel industry, and we lost a lot of jobs. But at that same time, there was about $2 billion worth of investment in northern Minnesota around pulp and paper, building materials. So you talk about the perfect storm. Now, we're seeing the paper industry is one of the other industries in this country that has gone through major downsizing. We lost every building material plant in Minnesota during the last housing recession that the Twin Cities felt very much. Most of that board that was used to build houses in the Twin Cities would come from Cook, Minnesota, and Bemidji, Minnesota, and other points north. So, you know, we've lost our diversification. We lost our diversification from the 80s to similar problems. So now we are, our agency is on a major push. We're looking at, again, using our natural resources, we're looking at biochemistry, biofuels. We're looking at forward-looking industries that are on a growth pattern. These deals take years to develop. There's not, so as somebody said, we're trying to buy time. The other thing that I want to say, we're not giving up on the taconite industry. We are competitive in the Great Lakes with our ore. Steel consumption in the U.S. was up 11.7% or something. I hope I have the number right last year in the U.S. The auto industry is making 17 million cars. They've never made that ever. It's a foreign steel dumping issue. So, you know, like we're apologizing for the taconite industry. It drives me crazy because there's nothing wrong with our taconite industry. And our workers, we're competitive. It's the highest tech. And we took the fad out back in the 80s. There's, you know, we had 15,000 employees, I think about, what was the peak, 52 million tons or something. We've made 46 million tons with 4,500 taconite workers. We have become the most efficient part of this chain. And so if we could stop the issue of federal dumping and get the inventories cleared out, and by the way, there's a lot of steel in this country laying around because people in other states like this. If you can buy your manufacturers can buy their steel a lot cheaper, so they love it. So if you're wondering why the federal government's not reacting, it's because there's a lot of pressure. Let's keep this foreign steel coming in. And what I worry about, we're going to have another paradigm shift where the big steel companies are going to say, well, let's just move our manufacturing to China or someplace, and we'll market it here and the manufacturers, and then and it'll take our population out. So we are working on diversification. As the senator pointed out, that's all we do is think about bringing other companies in. We have advanced with technology. We have Blue Cross Blue Shield, Delta Airlines has a call center up in our area and everything. They do not pay with the mind pay, but they are very good employers, and we really appreciate them, and they add to our income base up there. But so we are looking to diversify.
Well, and to add to that, I think our workers are as good and as competitive as any workers anywhere in the world. The issue that's happening with the steel is that the foreign governments are subsidizing the production of those steels, which our country doesn't subsidize production of steel. And I know for sure we can outwork anybody and outperform anybody. The question becomes, how do you stop that stuff from coming into the country? And that's what the federal government's got to come up with. So,
Chairman, not to make the issue more complex or anything, but also there are some large actors on an international scale in the private sector who are doing this deliberately. No. They're doing this as a tactic to potentially eliminate competition.
I think
just to be candid with people, the idea that we're going to be able to get this issue resolved in 26 weeks.
I don't think anybody thinks that, but yeah. I think we're thinking that we want to keep these people around, though, for sure. So let me go on to the next testifiers. Most of them drove quite a ways to come down here. We'll get them up here. So Brian Zarn. John, why don't you come up with them at the same time? Go ahead. Just say your name for the record, and then go ahead.
All right. Well, good afternoon, and thank you for inviting me here today. My name is Brian Zarn, and I'm the local union president at United Steelworkers 6860 in Eveleth. It's United Taconite. I represent about 420 working men and women. As of now, about 400 of us are laid off, and we got laid off all through the month of August. We were fortunate enough to have qualified for TAA. We're very grateful for that. But in February, those who have not enrolled in post-secondary courses will have exhausted their 26 weeks of unemployment benefits. Also, depending on your years of service, many of our younger workers are already out of insurance. At United Taconite, I did some number crunching, and approximately 45% of our workforce has 35 to 40 years of service. We've got a pretty old workforce up there. Another group, about 45%, has 10 years and less. Now, the TAA benefits, like I said, are great. We're grateful for them. But some of the people in this room have stated that that's not the answer for everybody. We're filling up the classrooms with guys that are 55, 57, 59 years old. These guys are going to go through the programs. They're taking the seat in our limited space of high school graduates. These guys are going to be going through the course. Their benefits will be extended while they're going to the school, but practically speaking, you know, what's going to be the value of a two-year deal? But practically speaking, you know, what's going to be the value of a two-year degree in the hands of a 60-year-old man, excuse me, or woman? It's been said here this 26 weeks isn't going to be the end of everything, and obviously we don't think this problem is going to be over in 26 weeks. We need time. We need some time to hopefully return to work in that extended amount of time. Right now there are some tariffs that have been put in on cold rolled steel, and those effects have yet to been felt by us. We're hoping that it will be an improvement for us. I know there's some cases on hot rolled steel that have not yet been settled. We're hoping that if those go our way, that that will also be helpful in getting us back to work. Now, also extending unemployment benefits could also actually end up being a net savings to taxpayers. It wouldn't put that loop for us older guys to jump through to have to qualify for more benefits. Well, the benefits of the schooling really probably aren't going to be there for a lot of our older guys and women. I graduated high school out of Mountain Iron in 1981. There was about 60 of us in our class. A few years after I left high school, Mountain Iron combined with Buell, and my youngest daughter just graduated out of that school with a graduating class of about 20. So, you know, we can't afford to take a hit on our young people leaving. We're just asking you to please consider holding a special session and consider giving us, extending a benefit for us. We need that time, and hopefully the industry will come around by then. We know it's not going to be fixed by then, but we need the time. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. John.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is John Rebrovich. I'm the assistant to the director of United Steelworkers District 11. I'm also a third-generation miner from the Iron Range. A couple of points I'd like to make here today. We've been talking about the foreign imports and what's coming in, and it's really not the price of ore. We're sort of shielded with the Great Lakes. And when we talk about this dumping, the representative had it right on the head. There's some people that are outside of this country that want to destroy our industry, but the hopes of taking it over, period. And through several years of this, we experienced it in the 80s, 2000s, 2009, we're finally getting some bipartisan support in Washington for this. I can tell you that there's been some discussion with respect to when these countries start dumping. As an example, last year, the oil pipe that was coming in. Once we file cases, it takes over a year before we get heard. Well, during that year time, there was four boatloads of pipe because they knew we had filed trade cases coming into this country. So there, the market is destroyed by the time we even get a hearing. There's talk now where they're going to short-circuit that once these trade cases are filed and these steel is coming in and being dumped, that there may be retroactive tariffs with respect to what's being dumped in here. With respect to the unemployment here, like I said, I lived through the 80s, 90s, 2000s, and Commissioner, I saw a lot of my friends and family had to move out of the Iron Range too. I was working 5 to 6 months a year, and the rest I had to depend on unemployment and some part-time jobs. Two of my three siblings had to move down to cities because there was no jobs. The last probably, I would say, 8 to 10 years, due to a lot of retirements, close to half of the miners are now 10 years or less. They're young families. They've got the kids. They're going to our schools, supporting our communities. Them are the ones that are really getting hit the hardest here. A lot of them, as you heard from Danny, said they don't have enough years in the mines to even qualify for any of the benefits. They're out of insurance. These are the people. These are the Minnesotans. And we're finally seeing young people back on the range. And now we're seeing these people trying to decide, do I have to move? Do I get out of here? Or is there some sort of hope? This unemployment extension, this may give them a little bit of a chance to sit back, take their time, and make a decision in the long term, not on a short term like this. So respectfully ask that you really consider this. It's going to help a lot of families on the Iron Range, a lot of young families on the Iron Range, and that's what we need on the Iron Range is to keep our commodity going. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions or comments for these two? Okay, thanks. Brian, maybe, you know what, though? Maybe you should just tell this group a little history of Evlithtech, because it's got a pretty interesting history from how it...
Their bankruptcies and all
bankruptcy
that.
And change of ownership and all yeah. change of pellets. And well, in fact, Evlithtech is the reason that we're moving Highway 53, so go ahead.
Well, like I said, I graduated high school in 81 out of Mountain Iron, and at that time... everybody that's familiar with the history of the Iron Range knows that everything was closing down. There was no hope of getting work up there. By 89, I had the opportunity to come back to the range from living out west, and I did that. The first 7 years I worked at the plant, up until 96, I got laid off every single year. I think the longest layoff was 18 months. So, you know, it has been cyclical. Ups and downs are inherent in the mining business. We've had a long run of good luck up until this year, really. But a little bit more history of Evels Taconite, now United Tac. In 2003, Evels Taconite went bankrupt. We lost our pensions. We did get put on the PBGC. We're getting a little less than half of what we thought we had coming for those years of service. And you know that's part of what we have to face up there. We came back in 2003 with Cleveland Cliffs. They bought us up and started operating us, and we had a pretty good run up until the recession in 2008. In 2008, our workforce agreed to move to a 32-hour work week, which we did for 11 months. And by doing that, the company was able to avoid laying off 100, which would have been our 100 youngest workers at the time. And those are the most vulnerable people. They have young families. They're not well-established financially. And now here we are again. We have there are big gaps of hiring at Evels Taconite. That's why we have, you know, one group of older guys and one group of younger people. And the needs are different for both. And like I said, the younger people are the ones I'm worried about the most for leaving. There's going to be nothing there to hold them.
Okay. Thanks, Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did want to thank my colleagues for the support on Highway 53 last special session that will come to fruition. We will get these plants back up and running. But I think Brian touches on a really good point, and it triggered one of my memories from this summer. Spent most of my summer working with people getting laid off. Lots of meetings with our different state agencies and stuff. And I remember one of Pierce's members came in to a meeting over at the MinTac local. Young guy, and I'd say probably 30 years old, maybe. Five kids, stay-at-home mom. And he walked in the room thinking, not going to qualify for any of the benefits here. Didn't know much about how his, you know, state government worked. Had never really filled out an unemployment insurance form before. And was really scared. He got his first bill for the family. Had brand new newborn. And got his COBRA estimate at $1,700 a month. And we sat down with the kid, with the MnSure navigators, and I know we've had our ups and downs with MnSure, but in the support that they've given our community members at the larger trainings and kind of the hotlines that we've had, I'm very appreciative of the help that we've gotten there in navigating that these members also get insurance. Every member under 2 years who's in a U.S. Steel or Steelworker contract loses their, or doesn't even have the option for company health care. You know, so I think of that one kid, and he ended up saving from that $1,750. Ended up, because of the personal situation he was in, his wife was working from home, essentially raising the family. He ended up $50 a month for him and $50 for his wife for their medical coverage. I was proud that day when we got that done, but I was also scared. Because it's the kid whose wife worked at the gas station to make that few extra bucks that didn't qualify. And there's nothing I can do as a state legislator. If the numbers don't work, the numbers don't work. You deal with people who are close, right up on that borderline of being able to qualify for a benefit. You know that it's going to make or break. Just having dinner, normal life. And I don't want to have anyone down here feel like we're here with our hand out. I think a young kid, Joe, at our meeting with the vice, I'm getting that from you, Senator Tomazoni, the president's chief of staff, said it best. A young kid, I think he's from Arizona or Texas, moved up here 4 years ago. He knew that he was a grunt out at the plant, is what he told the chief of staff. Just wants to, you know, have the opportunity to continue being that grunt because he loves the work he does. We're just asking today for your support for those few people who are slipping through the cracks. Time is all we need.
Can I add one thing?
Right.
The Iron Range is a little bit different than the cities. It's been touched on here. There really is no economic diversification up there to speak of. We're the only game in town. That nut has been tried to crack for decades to try to get more industry up there. It just doesn't happen. When the mines are down, you can't go to another mine and get hired. I can't go down to Lakehead and apply as an electrician and get hired on there. Those people are being devastated too. So, yeah, maybe we are here with our hat in our hand, but we're out of options. We just ask for your consideration.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Dave? Nancy, do you want to come up too with them? Or? Okay.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for allowing me to be here today. My name is Dave Lislegard, and I work in business relations for Lakehead Constructors. We are a major supplier vendor to the large industrial companies across northeast Minnesota, and mining being at the top of the list. I am here today to share with you that it is an alarming situation on the range. Our company, along with other supplier vendors, are starting to see the snowball effect. In 2014, Lakehead Constructors alone employed 1,271 different men and women from the building trades, compared to 900 in 2015. When converting these numbers into full-time equivalent, it's 80 full-time jobs lost, and that's in just 1 year, and that's just our company. Behind every one of these numbers, as that gentleman said, is a face, is somebody trying to support their family. As a former steel worker, I lost my job with Senator Tomazoni back in 2001. I can tell you the fear and anxiety that each one of these individuals is feeling is real, and it affects their children as well. When things are not well at home, they know it. As a councilman for the city of Aurora, a community that's still struggling back to 2001, in the last 10 months alone, we've lost the Mesabi Nugget plant. We lost our only dentist due to retirement and our inability to recruit anybody to come there. We lost our pharmacist, the drugstore where my wife once worked. Talking about retraining, she's going to Lake Superior College. She never went to school after she graduated. She's going to be a truck driver. It may seem non-traditional, but you have to put food on the table. And for that, I am very proud of her. We've also lost Minnesota Power, their area office, and to us, that is a pillar in the whole region. Lastly, what the mayor of Babbitt said, we lost our grocery store. I ask each of you, how many cities do you know that don't have a pharmacy, they don't have a drugstore, or they don't have a dentist? No dentist, no pharmacist, and no drugstore, no. The problem is real, and the effects are far-reaching. Let me say in closing that we are very proud of what we do. And like each of you, we deeply care about our families and our communities. We are here asking for help, that is true. Not the end-all be-all, but rather a bridge to help our families and our communities make it through this most difficult time. So I want to thank you for letting me be here today, for this opportunity to share with you our story, and ask for your compassion and understanding through this most difficult time. Thank you.
You wear a lot of hats.
Yes, I guess.
Okay, Representative.
Unfortunately, I was before Representative Hackbarth earlier, and when I was before you, the drugstore, my wife was still working, and you talk about the 1980s. What people don't understand is in the 1980s, it was a difficult time, people moved. Well, since 2001, there's nothing more to take. Now we're feeling the full effect in the Aurora White Lakes area. There's nothing more. Come. You know, I mean, it's real. 26 weeks, to your point, no, this is a big problem. The IRRRB is doing an outstanding job. They are reaching out. They are trying to diversify, but it's not easy. You know, we're a natural-based region. So,
economic development isn't an exact science. There's no doubt about that. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I really appreciate the moving testimony from your constituents and Representative Metzen and Representative Moline's constituents. It's a really important issue. Mr. Chair, I'm just curious. I reached over and asked Representative Garofalo if the governor's liaison was the same one for his committee as mine. I do not see Molly Peterson in the audience. It's my understanding this has been a priority of the governor. I look out, I see no one from the governor's staff here. It's my understanding that somebody's going to present a bill to us. Folks, I got to let you know. I asked Representative Garofalo, who chairs his committee, Representative Hackbarth, who chairs the Mining Committee. I chair the Environment Committee. No one from this administration has reached out to us and asked us to help you. I sat in this same room this summer next to Senator Tomasoni when we were talking about Mille Lacs, and he said, don't forget the steel workers. They need our help also. Mr. Chairman, I hope the governor's office is going to be here in the next 20 minutes because I've got an hour's worth of questions. If they're not interested, if they're just interested tomorrow having some press conference because saying the deadline's up now and nobody's doing anything, I'm going to do something, that's a bunch of bull. We have never been reached out to, never asked for our help. We want help. I've got all kinds of ideas just based on what I heard today. I'd like to know when they're going to be here so we can find out from the governor's office what they're doing and where's the bill.
Okay, I can't. Maybe Commissioner Clark-Steven, you can address that.
Mr. Chair, so unemployment insurance, which we're discussing today, is housed within the Department of Employment and Economic Development, and we do have some language that was shared with the chair, so I think there's language to be distributed today.
And so, I was going to do that next, but go ahead.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, Commissioner Clark-Steven, are you the one I should direct my questions to then?
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, I believe that I'm always happy to answer any questions that I possibly can, or my team is happy to do that as well. I believe this working group is here to discuss, and I think that's what is next on the agenda. But how we might like to move forward together. But if there are any questions, I can help answer.
So nobody from the administration is going to be here to tell us how they're working with us on what's going on. You're our liaison for this, then.
Well, Commissioner Phillips and I are here on behalf of our agencies, the Dayton Administration Cabinet, so we're happy to answer any questions.
Well, Mr. Chair and Commissioner, you are sitting on that side of the room. I know it's impolite to point, but I wanted folks to know on the other side of the room, when we were here this summer, Senator Tomasoni mentioned the steel workers. And I mentioned a factory where you're married into the family that has a long history in my hometown that lost a factory from over 100 years, where we have workers that are now 60 years old, worked there for 41 years without a high school diploma, and they're looking for a job. So this is not unique. We have never once been reached out to talk about this stuff. And these folks are being held pawns by this administration in what's going on. They deserve to be more than pawns, and many of us know what we went through. If you listen to most of those folks, Senator Tomasoni, they're younger than you and I and Senator Saxhog, because our friends lived through what the closest thing in the late 80s, when my friend David Marks lost his job at Reserve and had to travel across the state of Minnesota to work till he could come back and work up on the range and leave his four kids back there. But Commissioner, I got all kinds of questions. Is TAA available to these union workers? Can they sign up and be part of a program that you can set up at the local trade school, and will they get additional week's benefits while they trade. Just on TV yesterday, MnDOT said they don't have the workers to do the construction jobs for this summer. Well, the pictures we see are guys driving off-road trucks, backhoes, and the jackets I see are from the labor's union and such. Mm-hmm. Can they cross over and work for those unions this coming season and collect enough weeks to be eligible for unemployment? And would that training make them eligible for TAA? Mm-hmm. There's a ton of questions. I don't understand. We have great resources in the House caucus, and no one reaches out to us to find out what our thoughts are about solutions. They want to politicize everything. One time it's the fish in Mille Lacs, and now it's these poor workers on the Iron Range. This isn't about politics. This is about moving our state forward. And nobody from the administration's even here. You work for an agency. I'm sorry. I can look out and see somebody from MPCA here, too. And there may be somebody from DNR. How about the governor, who is such a high priority? How about somebody from here? Where's Ms. Tincher? Where's Molly Peterson? You got to look at my phone log. Mm-hmm. She hasn't been on there all summer. Huh. Not once.
Senator Thompson.
Can I respond?
Yes, go ahead, Commissioner. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Representative McNamara, I know the governor has been very involved in this particular issue. He traveled up to the range on December 23rd with the Chief of Staff, McDonough, heard directly from mine workers, mining companies, the community on exactly what is going on the range, and he and his team have been in constant communication with legislators from that area that are very concerned about their own constituents and working on that issue. In regards to your question on TAA, the mining companies that have had layoffs so far, yes, they have been received TAA eligibility. So the workers that have been laid off through those mining companies are eligible for TAA. There are other businesses that I commented on in my opening remarks that are not mining companies, but they are other businesses in the area that are now indirectly affected and are also now experiencing layoffs. Our TAA team is investigating 731 workers that have been laid off from those businesses and investigating whether those layoffs were due to trade impacts or not. The likelihood is low that any of those businesses are going to be eligible for TAA. Some of these layoffs are smaller layoffs, 5 people, 7 people, but it adds up to a total of 731 that are under investigation at the moment. And then through Commissioner Phillips and his team at IRRRB, they did a survey just in the last 24 hours. As he mentioned, he only has a 15% response rate, but there is an additional 500 individuals identified through that survey that have been laid off that also do not have access to TAA. So it's a mixture, a mixed bag. The mine workers, yes, they do have access to that TAA benefit, but there are other vendors, suppliers, local businesses where individuals are laid off, and we've heard from the testimony today about some of those situations that do not have access, and they only have access to that maximum 26-week benefit.
Mr. Chair, if I can follow up. So, Commissioner Clark Sieben, thank you. Have your discussions with Commissioner Zelli been so far about these folks filling the void that MnDOT has identified as shortages across our state of Minnesota in the exact same trades that these folks work in, and their eligibility to be cross-trained immediately so that they could be eligible? Would they be eligible for TAA? What have you found out with MnDOT in pursuing that avenue? Because it was just on the TV. I don't learn anything from the administration because they evidently don't know my phone number, but most of the people in the room do. And if you want to know it, it's 612-366-7541, and you can call me any time that you want my advice. Because some of us actually did something for 30 years before we came here, and we know a little bit, and we're a little disappointed. And I'd like to know, what have you found out with MnDOT about having these people cross-train so they can jump on the car in the morning on Monday morning and go to work for a week and come home and see their family, and when this thing recovers like it did in the 80s, they'll have a job back there at home where they want to live.
Mr. Chair, Representative, So the purpose of DAA is to be focused on retraining for other fields. And so that's what our team is focused on every day in partnership with MNSCU institutions. These individuals have benefits for up to 2 years of training in other fields to try to help them find new opportunities should this industry not come back. As we've heard from testimony today, you know, we hope that the steel dumping issue, that there'll be action taken, that this will come back, that these jobs will come back on the range, but there's a significant economic issue at the moment that there are real people, real families that need additional assistance, need additional extended benefits that are not eligible for that TAA training plan. And so I think that's the group that our department is most concerned about at the moment. We are we have people on the ground working with laid-off individuals on a daily basis, one-on-one, helping them to get signed up for TAA if they are eligible, explaining benefit plans, explaining options, looking for new opportunities. So we are taking an active role in that.
And, you know, Representative McNamara, to be fair to the governor, he has been extremely supportive of this extension. I don't know if he hasn't called you personally or not, but my understanding of the two commissioners that are here on the working group are they're the representatives of the governor, and participating as his representative. So I don't know whether his chief of staff should have been here or not, but I think the understanding is that Commissioner Clark Seaman and Commissioner Phillips are the two representatives of the governor on the working group, and so that was the understanding when we started this. And so,
well, Mr. Chair, for the record, neither one of them's called me either.
Okay, all right. Now you guys got his number. And Dave, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I just wanted to be fair to the governor that you know, when all this was unfolding this summer, he privately reached out to a group of us. He didn't publicize it, but he did come meet with us and meet with real people and real stories that didn't get no publicity. So I wanted to be fair. You know, he met with us.
Yes, I've got. Okay, so I got. I'm going to pass out two things. Three things, but the two bills that you're going to see. One is what is coming from the administration. This is the small one, and then the larger one is the one that I put together with Senate staff yesterday, and I think they're very similar. But what if it's once we get them all passed out, what I'm going to do is have our staff go through the bills. And you have this one, and you can either let's start out with the one that's on the Yeah, you can leave. You don't have to ask my permission to do that. Okay, and so this the one that's on the 8.5 by 14 piece of paper that says SC 1811 in it. That's the one that I put together with Senate Counsel just to put some ideas down on a piece of paper. And the smaller one that says version 2.1616. I believe that's from the governor's staff. And so. What I think I'll do here is just have it, who wants to go through? Mr. Fuller, do you want to explain the two bills or? Yeah, go ahead. Just I think they're pretty straightforward, but and I don't know that there's much of a difference between them either. So start out with the Senate one, I guess.
With the Senate one?
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, members, there's about four concepts in this bill.
Let's do this. Why don't you go sit up there so we can actually see you, and then everybody can look at you. Is that okay?
Carla, can
just because we can hear you better and everything. Yeah, just sit at one of those. Okay, whenever you're ready, Mr. Fuller. So I'm having Mr. Fuller go over the SC 1811 first, and we can. I don't know if there's much difference between that and what the governor's staff has put out, but I'm going to have him let you know what it is. So go ahead, Mr. Fuller.
Thank you. There's been 9 or 10 of these sorts of bills over the years, and there's some familiar boilerplate in all of them, and there's just as a sort of a preface, these laws have to be administered, so there's always close cooperation with the department to make sure that they can do what we want them to do. You know what you want to do, and they know what we want them you want them to do, and they can do it, which is not always the case. So, okay, so the first concept that's in the bill is that it expands, and it's in both of the proposals, expands eligibility for benefits beyond those who are directly working for the mining industry, and includes the concept of people working for employers who supply services or materials to the industry. All right? So that's the first concept. It's what employees can be covered. Okay? The second concept that's in here is how long can these benefits be? And this bill, and they both do, 26 weeks of additional eligibility. And then in this bill, like I say, there's been 8 or 9 bills over the years, and oftentimes you name the employers. You name the companies. It's LTV, it's the airlines. But sometimes you don't. In 2009, there was an extension of benefits to sort of companion the federal extension of benefits, and it's just identified what employees would be covered. And sometimes there are related industries, like in the 9/11 instance, there were industry-related employers who were also included because they had the impact. So then that's what this bill does. It looks at the impact of the activity, the Senate document, and says, okay, who are those who are impacted? Who are similarly situated by what's happened? And the general principle then would be that those who are similarly situated, if it's possible and reasonable, the effort should be made to treat them similarly. If two people are both laid off because the mine is shut down, and one's working for the mine and one working for a contractor, sort of the principle is, well, what's the difference? Treat them the same. This law has a retroactive provision. There are dates in this bill. The theory is, and those are subject to change, the theory is that coverage is going to be provided to those when these incidents happen. So whatever dates make that work, whenever they're vulnerable, if it happens to be March 1st of this year or November 20th last year, this bill tries to err on the side of being very inclusive. And, of course, if people aren't there, they won't get it. So basically the thought is if you are suffering or subject to wage loss and you've run out of your benefits, that this bill would cover you to the greatest extent possible. The other bill has a few different dates, and I'm not sure that's significant because I'm not sure exactly what the dates are that would cover those folks who you want covered. So that's the principle, and it's based on historical precedent. There have been bills in the past or laws passed that had 26 weeks. The 2009 bill that provided for a state extension paralleled the federal, which went up to, I think, 78 weeks. We sometimes not identify specific employers, and we've made it retroactive. This bill has a retroactive provision in it, and that's found in some other laws, and there can be a great deal of retroactivity. And on the 9/11 one, which was passed in 2002, was made retroactive to June 1 of 2001. And again, the theory is you're trying to help those folks who are hurt during the time period when the events occurred. So that's the gist of this bill. The boilerplate, there's one theory in there that's sort of inside baseball, which is, and it's in both bills, and it's been in other bills as well for laws that have passed, which is if during the period of time that's involved, you become eligible for new benefits other than the first 26 weeks of regular benefits, there's a direction given as to what happens. Generally, you have to go get those new regular benefits, although there's been differences over the years. And again, I think the goal of this proposal is to make sure that people don't fall through the cracks and what's done is best for them. The final difference in the bill is that in the did you want me to talk about the differences?
Yeah, go ahead.
The final difference I noticed between the 8.5 and 11 proposal was that it didn't have the retroactivity. It also provided that once you went on TSA, you couldn't come back to the state program. And I think The Senate doesn't have that proposal, but and it's mostly because we're not really sure what happens if whether we want that to happen, whether we want the ability to come back into the state program. So that's something that'll have to be discussed because we're not fully informed on that issue.
Well, yeah, I think we at least you have an explanation of what's in front of you and what something to this effect. Should we go into special session, would be one of the bills introduced. Representative Neal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could Mr. Fuller speak to if this cost is socialized or if it's paid by the employer?
Mr. Chair, neither bill provides for a chargeback of benefits, which has happened in other laws that have passed. So they would not go into the experience rating of a taxpaying employer nor be charged against a reimbursing account of a reimbursing government or nonprofit employer. And both of the proposals provide that.
Thank you. And follow up, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
And Mr. Fuller, of the list that we were provided about the different years and the different bills that we've had, the different session law that's happened, do you know how many of those have been socialized?
Yes, I do. It. 2001 LTV mining, there was no chargeback. 2007 Ainsworth lumber, there was no chargeback. And in 2009, the bill that provided for a state extended unemployment compensation program for those who didn't qualify for the federal because of a particular earnings qualification, that was not charged back. So that would be like 3 out of 8 or 3 out of 9.
And okay, so discussion. I'm not sure that our job is to say we vote for a special session or vote against a special session, but it seems to me that what we're establishing here is a need, and it sounds to me like we've established a pretty serious need. And I don't know if the committee members want to discuss that or not, but I believe that if this working group was charged with deciding whether or not there was a need for a special session for unemployment benefits for workers on the Iron Range, I believe we've established it. I don't know if anybody else agrees with me or not, but I believe we have. And maybe we should get some feedback from members on the committee to let me know what you're thinking, because I've gone through this now several different times since I've been in the legislature. In 1992, that was the year I was elected to the House. In 1993, National Steel closed. We were afraid that they were going to tear the place down, so we passed a bill that said that when you lay people off and close down the plant, you have to keep the plant in working condition for 2 years in order, just in case they go back to work. And in that particular case, they did go back to work. LTV closed in 2001. We heard what happened to Evolith Tech. These places have the ability to be resurrected, and as you all know, and I hate to bring this up, but I'm going to, LTV is being considered to be used now for the Polymet project, and so that one is still in operating condition and can be put back to work also for other jobs. So the fact is that every now and then these types of issues happen. They happen to an area of the state that is very unique for the rest of the state, and it has a natural resource-based economy that is our way of life. I'm sitting here in front of you saying I think this is very necessary, and I think it's something that we need to send a signal to the people that are working up there so they know that we're going to give it our best effort. And so I'm willing to entertain feedback, or if nobody wants to say anything, anybody who's been watching this or listening to it can make their own judgment, but I'm hoping that we decide to go to a special session, even if this is the only reason we go.
Senator, a couple of quick questions.
Okay, go
I'm
ahead.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Okay. First of all, is this this language, is this coming from yourself, the legislature, from the governor's office?
The governor's office did the language on the small sheet.
Okay. And
I put together this language on the bigger one.
And you or anyone at the table can answer this question. Is this the only legislative proposal for a special session regarding assisting northern Minnesota that we're seeing from the governor's office?
As far as I know, yeah.
Are there any other ideas the governor's office is proposing for a special session to benefit northern Minnesota besides this?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, no, this is the language at this point in time.
Okay. You want to go first? Or you
no, go ahead.
I just have a quick clarification or fact question. But I, unless I missed it, I didn't really hear, like, who's immediately going to be needing, like, numbers, like how many people and the impact to the trust fund. And since it's going to be, you know, this proposal is socialized, so I haven't heard any hard and fast numbers as to who, how many, how much.
I think the commissioner went over that originally, but yep. Go ahead and do it again.
Mr. Chair, Representative, so there are 336 individuals that work for mining companies that will exhaust their 26-week benefits in January, February, or March. They are TAA eligible. There are 731 individuals that have been laid off from companies that are not TAA eligible, that are on regular benefits, that are under investigation. There's an additional 586 that have been identified through a survey that is still in process, but a survey that are also laid off in companies that are not TAA eligible and will exhaust benefits after the end of 26 weeks.
And if you add it all up just on the plants that are shut down, you're going to get close to 2,000 just with the miners. Okay.
And do we have Chair, do we have a number as to how much that would affect the trust fund balance?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Commissioner.
Yep. Make sure I get this right. Correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Caligiuri. So, Mr. Chair, Representative, so on average, if there were 1,000 people that received extended benefits for a 26-week period, it would be about $17 million. Impact to the trust fund. Correct.
And maybe, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner, maybe we could just, do we need a legislative session to get a fiscal note on this, or can we just request one right now informally and get that? Do you know?
I think she just gave you the answer, didn't you?
Well, but yeah. We don't.
Oh, you want
we
to
have, we have fiscal notes.
You want to see it on paper? I'm fine with that. That'd be good.
So I don't know. If you need something in writing, let us know.
No, I think it's something we should know. Yeah,
yeah, so yeah. Let's just, yeah. Maybe if we can get a fiscal note on that, that would be helpful. Mm-hmm.
And Chair, to that point, I mean, we only have 15% response in a 24-hour period, and I'm having a hard time understanding why we waited till 24 hours ago to begin that process. So I take issue with that, just for the record. But it's really hard to really understand the full capacity of this until we know, you know, how many. And like I said, that's only 15% of the respondents. So
and that's on the provider side. But go ahead, Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman. The state can get accurate numbers, but and they're not forward-looking. So we tried to do the survey to try to get a handle on the non-mining but mining-related vendor supplier base that's more forward-looking. So until somebody signs up for something, and Rick could probably add to this conversation too. Until that happens, they're really not counted in any statistics that we can just grab from the state system. So we're trying to get the information by anecdotal, I guess, but through surveying through the association.
And Representative Neal, we are a little bit guilty in not asking for the numbers sooner, yep. on the vendor community is what those 15% are. And I think the IMA is getting those answers, right? The
correct.
Iron Mining Association.
Well, so. And thank you, Mr. Chair. And to that point, you know, if we're going to include that entire group of folks in this bill, you know, I agree with Chair Garofalo also that we really need to know what numbers we're talking about and what impact we're talking about and how many people we're talking about. And
I don't disagree.
Anecdotal is wonderful, but we'd really like to know the global picture.
I don't disagree.
Mr. Chairman, I would just say you can't compel anybody to sign up for unemployment insurance, so you will never know in advance the precise number of people that will actually sign up for the insurance. So you're trying to get the best estimate on what that block or potential might look like.
Well,
for planning purposes.
In addition to that, Commissioner, the fact is that some people may end up accessing the additional benefits, and some people that we estimated to be accessing the additional benefits may not, because they may either find a job somewhere else or go back to work. And in the construction industry, that's very possible that it could happen at any time or anywhere. So I think that's part of the issue. It'll be hard to estimate, I think. But I don't disagree. I think we need to know what a good estimate would be.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And also, back to Representative and Chair McNamara's question about MnDOT. I mean, that just, you know, I think that we're here to find solutions. You know, and that hasn't been raised except for by him, and, you know, cross-training and moving them into other
It's a agencies. Good question, because this did happen under the Ventura administration, and I do remember the governor actually asking MnDOT to do a $10 million project on the Iron Range to try and get some of these people working. And maybe the steelworkers could help me out here. I don't remember if anybody ended up working on the transportation or not, and so I don't know. But I mean, it's a good question, and it's a good theory. Whether or not it works in practice, I think is probably is something we need to find more about.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you know, and the other question, since you raised the PolyMed, or someone here had just reached PolyMed, I would like to know as well if the PolyMed plan was approved and went through, how many workers would be, you know, could be taken up at least temporarily, or.
Go ahead.
You know, that seems like that's been the process.
I mean,
for such a long
time. The numbers we've been hearing are 360 to 400 full-time permanent workers, and then there'd be 500 construction workers in the construction stage before those 360 permanent workers go to work, and then you have a 2-to-1 to 3-to-1 spinoff on ancillary jobs once they go to work in the PolyMed group.
Thank you, Chair. And also the pipeline, so the Sandpiper pipeline, if those two projects were up and running, what impact would that have?
I don't know if Sandpiper would have an impact on the Iron Range immediately, because it's coming through northwestern Minnesota and heading south of Floodwood over toward the Superior area. And maybe somebody's got some better numbers than I do, but I don't know what the impact would be on construction workers or who would go to work. So,
Mr. Chairman, I just want to make sure we have our action items for this as we wrap up this meeting. I know Representative Hackbarth will close, has some comments. But number one, so we're going to get fiscal notes on both drafts of the bill. So there'll be a version A fiscal note and a version B fiscal note.
Well, I think that's up to the administration to try and figure that out. You can do that, right?
Okay. We will work on that.
Okay. So that's the first thing. The second thing is the commissioner stated, and I guess we'll get verification on this, that with regards to the Northern Minnesota unemployment issue, that the only item that would be considered for a special session is going to be the unemployment benefits. And my commitment to you is that I think part of this needs to be job creation strategies for Northern Minnesota. So I'm going to commit to you that by the end of the week, the end of next week, I'm going to offer you my ideas that I think are good for creating jobs in Northern Minnesota, not just the unemployment benefits. And I would encourage the administration to maybe revisit that issue and maybe come back with their own job creation strategies as well, because the factors that have been mentioned, as we've heard in this testimony, everyone agrees that in 26 weeks the likelihood of the iron ore issue being the dumping issue being resolved is highly improbable. So that's my commitment to you. And then third and finally, just going forward, I think a takeaway we should all take from this is that for those in the future, when people want special sessions, rather than sending out a press release, it's probably a good idea for us to pick up the phone and call each other and maybe make that suggestion to one another so people can understand the context of it and are not left to our friends in the media to summarize complex arguments or two or three sentences that they're allowed to. And I think those three takeaways, if we were to do that from this meeting, I think that puts us in a good path. So that's all I have to say.
And, you know, I understand what you're saying, because maybe what's been happening is that, I mean, I've been in very close contact with the administration and has been the entire Iron Range delegation, and maybe that's because we're the ones that are immediately affected. And so I don't begrudge you for saying that you haven't heard anything or haven't been held in the loop, but I think maybe what the administration has been doing is trying to find out where we're coming from and what we're thinking and what the opinion of the delegation has been, and because we have been in close contact with them. So I guess the outreach that has been happening is maybe not been going to everybody, and I don't know how you do that, but I guess at some point in time I understand the feelings you have.
Well, I think at a minimum maybe you want to talk to the chairs who have jurisdiction over, just a thought. But I mean, I think the more important thing is that going forward, job creation strategies, I would really encourage the governor's office, if they have ideas on getting jobs created, there's really no reason for us to wait on that, and that should be part of this.
I'm happy to hear you say that, but I got to tell you, people have been coming up with these job creation ideas for the Iron Range for as long as I've been there. And if you got something that's going to work, I'm more than happy to entertain it.
Oh, I got lots of things that'll work. Yeah. I mean, and the first thing mm-hmm. would be that maybe we need state government to not be killing the jobs that are trying to be created.
Well, that's
just a thought.
That's
so.
But that's not something we're going to solve in the special session. So.
Oh, well, I think we could.
Well, I mean...
Well, so, I just, again...
If you can, that'd be...
I think that job creation strategies, as an overall point, mm-hmm. to just summarily kick that past a special session, I don't think that's a good long-term strategy. And I think, and again, job creation strategies, there's 1,000 different ways to create jobs, but just focusing on providing unemployment benefits, we're better off combining those two strategies together. That's just my opinion. I speak only for myself and not for others.
I'm more than willing to look at it.
Thank you.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to jump in front because I know Representative Hackbarth would like to give some comments to him. Excuse me, Representative Hackbarth, for jumping. But Commissioner Clark-Steven, I would like you to work with MnDOT. I know the union folks are here. I see them here. What eligibility is there to create at the Minsky campuses a TAA-approved program that could get these guys and gals potential unemployment benefits? And I know you might not be able to answer it here, but please add it to your work list. Can you be creative with Minsky and create a program that meets the federal guidelines that get these folks a job? Because there will be some cross-training. It is different equipment a little bit and stuff. And could it qualify, even though maybe it's the same union they're currently in, it might be a little bit different work? Because, as I said, it was just on TV last night. They don't have enough people for the construction jobs for the money that they have available to spend next year. So I think, I know nobody likes having to travel to get away from home. Been there, done that for a number of years. So, but I think, please look into it.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe Commissioner Seba can follow up with Representative McNamara on that. But I know someone from the 49ers is here. This wasn't going to be to my point. I have other things to say. But I believe the 49ers, the operating engineers, are working with DEED or MnDOT to get their training program certified TAA so that they can do exactly what Representative McNamara is talking about and get their laid-off magnetation workers to work for MnDOT. So maybe she can comment quickly on that, and then I can go to the rest of my comments, okay. Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Julia.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Julia Donnelly. I'm the political and legislative director for the Operating Engineers Local 49. Representative Moline is correct. We have been working with folks at DEED, both at the government affairs level as well as the dislocated worker program, and somebody with the TAA office directly to try to figure out a way to make our training center WIOA certified in order for them to qualify for these benefits. I don't want to make this a political thing either, but the department has been really great working with us. Last year when we had people laid off at Magnetation Plant 1, a lot of them were able to seamlessly transition into the highway heavy construction. Many folks around this table supported the Highway 53 bridge during special session last year. That put a lot of these people to work. But furthermore, when we're talking about TAA benefits, a lot of you talked about how retraining always isn't the answer. And if you want to get TAA benefits, it's predicated on you retraining. So if these benefits aren't extended, we are going to be incentivizing people to leave this field of work. So that's pretty much all I got. So I can stand for any questions.
Well, go ahead, Representative.
Ms. Donnelly, and thank you for that, because this is the first communication I've had about this, and I feel bummed out that they hadn't, because some folks have lost their benefits already and are no longer eligible. But can't you tailor a program? My idea is you tailor a program that they could go to work this April or May when the work's available. Can't you tailor the program to be just long enough to get them the training they need to jump on a scraper in 1st of May?
So, I mean, Representative McNamara, Mr. Chair, you know, we are working exactly on that. Our apprenticeship program is regulated, obviously, by the Department of Labor, so there's specific issues and that have to be met in order for a registered apprenticeship. Many of these workers are highly skilled and aren't apprentices. They're journey-level workers. And so maybe they're doing one type of work in a mine at Magnetation, and they're 49ers, and they want to transition to highway heavy. They will need to probably go upgrade their skills and get some certifications in order to go out and do that work. And we are working with the department to come up with a way to do that.
Representative Moline, you wanted to say something else, you said?
Yeah, Senator Thomas, just kind of final comments. Okay. Thank you. I represent Keewatin Taconite, which has had the longest layoff, and we heard from some employees here today. But just to make clear, many of those employees, their benefits have already run out. They are already going without a paycheck. Not everybody even qualifies for TAA if they haven't been employed long enough, and their options are none right now other than to find another job, which is probably low-paying in compared to what they were making. And so, you know, I know we're here to talk about the immediate need of unemployment benefits. I personally know a number of couples, friends of mine, who both husband and wife are out of work right now. Either both of them work for the mining industry, or one works for Keetac or United Tac, and the other works for a vendor or supplier to the mining companies. So you have both spouses out of work right now. So they're in a family crisis mode where their unemployment checks have run out or will run out before regular session starts, and they will have no family income. They're then faced with the scenario of getting a low-paying job, maybe $10 an hour, and actually end up paying more in child care to put their kids back in daycare than they would even earn taking one of those low-paying jobs. So, you know, what we're here asking for is extended relief for these families who are facing an immediate financial crisis. And, you know, Representative Garofalo, I know you've brought up job creation and diversification, and we've heard that around the table, and we are always working on diversification. But we're talking about jobs that start out at $90,000 a year, and there's over 4,500 of them on the range. You know, ask any of your rural members if they could get 4,500 jobs starting out at $90,000 a year in their legislative districts overnight. It just doesn't happen in rural America to have high-paying jobs like that in rural America. So while we work on diversification and we talk about PolyMet and our copper-nickel mining, those jobs are supposed to be in addition to our taconite mining. They're not supposed to replace our taconite industry. And so while we'll continue to work on that, and while we'll continue to work on steel dumping, you know, right now we're just asking for some help to face this immediate crisis. You know, secondly, I've heard a number of times that we want to do a more expansive economic diversification or job creation for northern Minnesota instead of just the extending of unemployment benefits. And I will say that when those comments have been made publicly, I have immediately gotten on the phone with PolyMet. And if any of you want to call and ask them what they want in a special session, I would encourage you to do it, because they will tell you that they want nothing in a special session. They're asking for nothing in a special session and nothing in a regular session. And I want to make that clear on the record, because there have been lots of reports in the media that that certain legislators won't agree to extend unemployment benefits unless we do something for the copper nickel industry. And I have talked to them numerous times. They're not asking for anything. So if you can come up with some sort of creative idea that they're asking for that they haven't thought of yet, then I would be willing to hear that. But I just want to make clear that you know, we as a region are focused on extending unemployment benefits, not going down a road that our copper nickel industry is not even asking for. And we've been unabashed supporters of that industry, but they're just not asking for anything in a special session right now. And then just lastly, you know, I will say that the Dayton administration has been not only very helpful, but Governor Dayton himself has been to the range numerous times since our facilities have shut down. He was with us at the Union Hall in Eveleth. Lieutenant Governor Smith was with us at Keewatin City Hall when Keetac shut down. You know, he has two of his cabinet members here on the working group today, so I want to, you know, thank him for his responsiveness, and I just hope that we can all get on the same page, you know, whether we're Democrats or Republicans, and just work to help people that are out of work right now and whose families are facing a financial crisis. So I want to thank everyone who had questions today and provided input, and especially for our testifiers who drove 200 miles down here to tell us their personal stories. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. And we could have asked for another 100 people to come down if we wanted to, but I didn't think you guys would want to sit through all that. So, Representative Metza, did you have something you wanted to say?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a few closing remarks as well. First off, again, I appreciate the bipartisan support during the last special session for Highway 53. you know, I was skeptical going in or leaving session without it finalized. And I know it got hard at the end of last year for that because these are currently workers who are laid off. And I know a lot of people around the state ask, well, are we going to move that highway for nothing? I think I do want to point out that regardless of what happens with Cleveland Cliffs, the state, I believe, made a responsible decision to purchase the mineral rights under the road, which will give us the opportunity not to be forced in the future to have to move a highway. But what you're really, what you did in June was opened up a door so that over the next 2 years, as our steel industry is recovering, and iron ore industry here in Minnesota, we have that parcel that will be mineable. If we wouldn't have done that this last June, I would have my constituents in that mine not working at all. And so for that, I greatly appreciate it. And I wanted that to be on the public record that that was a bipartisan effort. In closing for today's meeting, I think that we have a number of people who are looking for numbers. I know Representative O'Neill, Representative Garofalo will work hard to get them, but I sat down with just two businesses last week, went and had a beer to catch up with a few of the guys, see how things are going. There's going to be 30 more layoffs I know of right now in the next 2 weeks just in Virginia, and it's directly due to the mining industry. Give you one example, the business owner went into contracts. He actually has steel worker employees, not at the mine, but a fabrication shop. And they knew times were tough. And this last year, they sharpened their pencils at work. They gave themselves a 15% pay cut on the executive level to tighten the belt. Let a few people go, offered everything they could to keep every employee on. The same employer next week is going to be letting some people go. But during that time, we're going to have a few people who are able to work. And I think that's the important thing at this point is the mom-and-pop shops out there, you know, our steel workers, God bless them, they've been through a lot this year. But the trickle-down is being felt now. And I can say over the summer, you could see the projects start to slow. You know, garage roof, maybe they weren't finishing the second half of the shingles. I mean, it's now, and we need the help now. And so I appreciate you all making the effort to come down today and consider these proposals on behalf of our constituents.
Thank you. Do either one of you guys on the phone want to say anything, as long as you're still there? If you're still there, are you still there, Representative?
Still here. I think there are a lot of questions I have to get answered. This is Gunther, by the way. And I think it's been a very productive meeting, and I look forward to continuing to find out the answers that we need to have answered so we can decide whether or not a special session would be profitable.
Mr. Chair, this is Anvil.
Go ahead.
It's been interesting to listen to you all by telephone. I'm somewhat perplexed as to why some of you chose to go far afield and away from the issue at hand. The issue at hand being, are you willing to grant a lifeline to a significant number of miners in the hopes that that lifeline allow them to stay on the Mesabi where they want to live, to allow them to keep their families together in the hopes that a break or two could occur at the national level, which would start bringing about some healing in the domestic iron and steel industry? That's your choice. That's the issue at hand. It has nothing to do for now with diversification of the economy of northeastern Minnesota, has nothing to do with MnDOT, has nothing to do with asking steel workers to take jobs from other people in other crafts. This is about a 26-week lifeline so so that steel workers can stay with their families on the Iron Range in the hopes that something good will happen nationally and the mines will go back to work. So I plead with you to simply stay on focus and simply approve and support granting these workers this extension. It's been done before, and it needs to be done again.
Okay, thank you, Representative Manzo. Representative Hackbar, I think you're the last one I got on the list.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And members, we had a working group like this. Senator Tomasoni and I chaired it on the Mille Lacs issue a number of months ago. And we came to a conclusion that more needed to be done. We had to investigate some things. We had to come up with some information. We had to gather more information and get some more facts. We didn't see that it was prudent to move ahead with a special session to address that at that time. I don't remember the exact amount the governor was asking for to just throw at the wall and hope it stuck and would resolve everything for the Mille Lacs area. I think it was $15 million, something like that. So hopefully we can resolve that issue in next session. So I'm sympathetic with the Iron Range, and I think everyone knows, and I think the Senator Tomasoni knows, and the rest of the Iron Range delegation knows, that I am sympathetic to this cause and doing something, and I would like to resolve that issue. In the last special session, or to wrap up the regular session, there was a number of things that the Iron Range wanted, and I went out of the box and went along with the delegation, the Iron Range delegation, to try to get those done. There was a number of people in our caucus that didn't see things quite that way, and but we did come together and we gave the Iron Range almost exactly everything that they wanted. There was three main issues, and that came about, and we passed that into law, and that's a done deal. We're sympathetic. We want to help is all the point I'm trying to make. Our Mining and Outdoor Recreation Committee, we brought the whole committee was invited to come to the Iron Range this summer. We took a tour of the Iron Range. We flew over the entire Iron Range to look at the situation. We know what's going on. But with this, there's a number of questions that we have to have. And I understand that we should stay focused, like Representative Anzell says, on the issue at hand. But there are other issues. The governor has on his desk right now paperwork that he's dragging his feet on, where there's some employers on the Iron Range right now ready to go to work to do some mapping and some things. They need to gain access, and the governor's dragging his feet on that. So when you say that that's not part of the issue at hand, there are jobs up there. There are companies that want to work. And to say that the governor's not involved, he is involved, and he's not addressing some of these issues. I think there was a piece in the paper just the other day that where the governor was working against some of these other projects that are in that area, and we don't want that to be happening. So there's a number of questions. I have questions about how many people are going to actually run out of unemployment benefits before we actually get into session on March 8th. Are the people that are on TAA, are they going to jump onto the 26-week benefit and drop off at TAA? I mean, that's probably not a good thing, too. So there's a number of issues and a number of questions that are not answered. We always have some kind of fiscal note. And when we talk about estimating, that's what fiscal notes are. You do estimate. That's what the departments do. I mean, they're purely estimates, but at least we have some kind of an idea of where we're at. How much money is this going to cost? We already heard that every employer in the state of Minnesota is going to contribute to the Iron Range and the unemployment benefits, not just the companies themselves. So that is a concern. What are we going to do for some of these other companies? There's other companies throughout the state that are in having some problems as well, such as Representative McNamara mentioned down in his district in Hastings. So I don't know that we have all the answers. I don't know that the House of Representatives can say, yes, let's do this, because we don't have the answers. From what I understand, now I haven't talked to the governor's office, but all I know is what I hear in the news, but the governor wanted an answer Friday morning whether we're going to have a special session or not. That's the last I heard. Now I hear that some folks said that, well, maybe he might be considering changing his mind on that. But last I heard, he wants to know tomorrow morning. I can't give an answer on that. I don't know if this is going to take care of it. You know, we analyze these bills for weeks at a time and go through committee after committee and get various ideas from different committee members. I mean, that's what we're all about here, is just myself, my individual self. I don't know that I have all the answers until I talk to some of these other folks and they bring other ideas forward to analyze some of these bills. What if this happens? Oh, what about this line on this bill? What if this happens here? We don't have any of that in this case. So to say that we're ready to say there's going to be a special session to take care of this issue, I don't know we can say that. Just yesterday is the first I heard about 26 weeks. All this time that we've been talking about a possible special session to address this issue, I've heard 13 weeks extension. Now, yesterday I hear 26 weeks. Now, that's different. That changes the game. So I don't think that we can commit as House members to saying that we're ready to go to special session on this issue. We want to help. If the governor had come to us earlier to help us work through some of these things, work through some language that he has, you know, that would be a different situation. I just can't see that the House of Representatives is going to be ready to go to a special session, especially when we have a couple of other issues that don't pertain to this. I think we could have done this, Senator Tomasoni. I think we could have worked through this. We could have come to an agreement with your bill and got this done in a special session, but there's other issues lingering out there, and I don't think those issues can be agreed to. So I think that's going to be a complicate matters, but I think we could have worked through some of these issues, figured out what this bill is all about and what it actually does, and I think the House of Representatives would be glad to get this done and help the Iron Range, but I just don't see it coming together.
Well, I'm very sorry to hear that. I think if there was ever an issue that rose to the level of a special session, this one does. And this is about people's lives, and this is about people's families, and about the school districts and all the people that work there. I think your questions can be answered easily if you want to know what they are. I mean, I think the commissioner gave you a ballpark figure of 1,000 people getting unemployment costs, $17 million to the fund. And so you can extrapolate from that if you want to and get some pretty decent answers. And I know we're having working groups on the other two issues, and I'm going to be joining Senator Champion and his working group right after this and see how that works out. And I don't know what the results are going to be with the other two, but I do believe that this one definitely does have the ability to go to a special session, because we need to send a really, really positive signal to the people on the Iron Range who have exhausted their benefits or who will be exhausting their benefits. And as you've heard, because we need to send a really, really positive signal to the people on the Iron Range who have exhausted their benefits or who will be exhausting their benefits. And as you've heard, the number is significant and the number is large. And so I'm hoping that you can get together in your caucus and see a way to support this, because I mean, this is serious stuff.
And Senator, I agree with you. We can come to an agreement, and I think that as a caucus we can do that. And that's exactly what I said. I think that on this issue, if there's any of the three issues, we can come together on this issue and work that out. There's a lot of things that have to be answered, a lot of questions that still need to be answered, but I think we can work through those and come to a conclusion and come to an agreement. And you're right. Out of the three different topics, this is one that we should be addressing.
All right. Does anybody else have anything to say? Okay. I don't think we're in a situation where we're going to vote for anything, so I'm not about to do that, and not going to ask anybody. But I thought the discussion was extremely good. I thought the case was made, and I think we all understand the issue. And whether or not the governor decides to call us, and go ahead.
Disagree with you. I think the people at home on the unemployed workers want us to take some action today. So I'd ask you to reconsider that.
We don't have any authority.
What's that? Repeat that again, Tom.
You want us to vote?
Huh?
We don't have.
I firmly believe that the people at home on the Mesabi, those that are affected or will be affected by this extended unemployment, and those who have other occupations and are part of the Iron Range community are tired of the talk and tired of the newspaper stories, and they would like us to take a vote today to see if there's an appetite for a special session, to give some direction and some focus to the governor and to others who have to be involved in any special session decision, most notably Senator Bach and the Speaker Kurt Dowd.
Well, I'm hearing a consensus of yes with answers to some questions. And I think if we take a straight up and down yes or no vote, Representative Van Zylk, I don't know that we accomplish what we're trying to accomplish here. But I think we leave the door open without a vote. And I think the door has to be left open, and I think that we have to be considerate of the fact that there's negotiations going on in other sections of the legislature.
Well, Senator Tomasoni, time is wasting. Rangers are making arrangements to leave the Iron Range and go elsewhere in the Midwest. As you know, the economy is booming throughout the Midwest. It's not like there aren't opportunities for Rangers to go to get good employment. And I just feel that this is urgent. Last night we lost another magnetization plant, and I'm concerned that January will bring more bad news, and that 2016 is likely to be worse than 2015. So I would just want you to hear me out about the urgency of the situation.
I'm totally with you on the urgency of the situation, and but I don't think a vote of this working group accomplishes what you think it will accomplish, because it's not binding on anybody or anything, and it feels to me like it's split in half, and so you don't really accomplish anything by voting on this. So I think we have a consensus that it's necessary, and that we'd like to do it, and I think there's answers that the questions that need to be done. I don't know if the working group needs to meet again to try and get answers to those questions or not, but I think that's a discussion that's going to happen later on today. So I don't think a vote accomplishes anything for this particular group. So is there anybody else that wants to say anything? Commissioners? No. Okay. With that, I want to thank you all again, and I guess meeting adjourned.